Hello, Chicago Bears fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Bears on Tap podcast. It's been a hot minute. The last time you heard from any of us, we were discussing our off-season guest series here where we asked about the state of the Bears. But now we're back. There's plenty to talk about in the world of Chicago Bears football. I'm Ron Luce. I am joined by the one, the only, Mr. Quentin at ButtGastats on Twitter. Quentin, long time no see, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Since we last talked, I moved across the country from Austin, Texas to Philadelphia. So here I am, got my new podcast set up and ready to get into the Bears season.
I'm right there with you, man. House looks good from what we can see here in your background there. It's like it was made for you to have your desk and your podcast studio right where you are. And yeah, man, I mean, it's been a while. Like you mentioned, you moved and the Bears have been doing some big things too, Q. And I know we discussed off air that we're ready to just dive right in and talk some training camp thoughts here. And you've got one that you really want to get off your chest. So I'm just going to hand you the floor, buddy. Talk to the people. What is going through your mind here with Bears training camp?
Yeah. So as I've been listening to stuff going on around, obviously I'm not at camp because I'm in Philadelphia, but as I've been listening to people who are at camp and the nervousness about Justin Fields' interceptions, and it's this thought that's been like just bothering me of like, why are we worried about this guy's interceptions? Has Justin Fields shown to be a quarterback who really puts the ball in harm's way when he's throwing it? Like, there's been fumble issues. If you're concerned about fumbles, I can understand it. And I personally am not, because I think a lot of them are fluky, but they happen. The ball hit the ground. Might not have lost it, but it still hit the ground. I understand it. But the interceptions, this is a guy who over 2 years has not really shown a penchant for throwing the ball away, like for throwing the ball to the other team, I should say, or throwing it away for that matter. But that's a different discussion. I don't think that year three training camp is the time where we start to suddenly see a player who's just turning into Rex Grossman out there, chucking the ball up without any thought about how dangerous this throw is, or any like who's really just taking care of the ball in poor fashion like that. Like, I was talking to a buddy of mine a few weeks ago, and he was telling me his thoughts on Fields this year of like, I just want a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. And my entire thought process with that was like, why are we talking touchdown interception ratio with a guy whose interceptions have not really been a major issue? And then we started going through every interception from last year, just talking through them. And it's like, okay, the first one last year against the Texans, it was trash, right? It was bad, 100% on Fields. The offense was still new. Guys weren't where they were supposed to be. Fields didn't understand it all very well. It was a bad pick. But the next one, you're down 17 with 2 minutes left. He's just playing hero ball out there. I can't knock him on that. And there were a handful like that where it's just like, you're down 2 scores, less than 2 minutes left. Got to make something happen. It was the same way with his rookie year. I wrote a whole article about it last year with his rookie year about going through every interception and what happened. So, like, I don't sit here and see a player who was making major mistakes in game-changing moments. I see a player who was forcing the ball in moments where he had to into spots he really knows he shouldn't. And if anything, the issues with Fields are more about him taking too much care of the ball, right? And being too worried about throwing into a spot that might put it in harm's way. It's just, it's kind of irked me hearing all this talk about Fields interceptions here, Fields interceptions there. It's not something I'm worried about, and it's not something I think is really productive conversation.
No, and I think you bring up such a good point, because I've seen a little bit of this discussion through various people on Twitter as well. And they brought up this point, which I completely echo and I completely agree. It's that none of us, even press credentialed folks that are at training camp, know what the Bears are actually working on that day. Nobody knows. Unless you're in that in Hallis Hall, nobody knows what the practice script entails. You know, the people have brought it up before. What if Justin Fields is working on something specific And, you know, what if the team is specifically working on deep balls that day and says, you know what, go ahead and force one if you need to and just see what happens. Make the receivers go get it. Make them use to those 50-50 balls. We don't know what they're working on. So an interception in practice is what it is. I've played with quarterbacks that got picked off all the time in practice. And I would rather him get picked off in practice. That's a learning moment. That's the time to get picked off, not in the middle of a freaking game. It's in practice because you are learning new things, or maybe you're installing new plays and maybe he just made the wrong read and it's, hey, Justin, what'd you do wrong there? And he's like, nope, I totally got it. I misread this. It should have been here. That's on me. Next play. No big deal. But the beauty of the world of social media is people can make a big deal out of it because it's an isolated incident in something that they don't even have full context on. So Q, I'm actually right there with you. I'm glad you mentioned it because I do think a lot of people are freaking out. Like, did we not just see the throw he made at Family Fest over the weekend where he threaded it between two defenders to DJ Moore on the line? That was sexy. That Fields never would have done that last year. That alone, to me, is a step forward in the right direction. So I love that you brought up that point, Q. I really do, because I do think a lot of people are blowing it out of proportion.
Yeah, and it's not to sit here and say that there isn't stuff to be concerned about with Fields. There isn't stuff to, you know, that we need to see him improve with. I just don't think the interceptions are one of them. I mean, unless the guy just suddenly decides to throw caution to the wind and be and like the stress of being in his third year gets to him or something. And like, I just don't see a guy in his third year becoming the swashbuckling throw it wherever my arm is better than any of these defenders type of player that we're really talking about him like he is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. A couple of comments here as well with those joining us live. We're a little early, understood. A lot of people getting home from work. We hope you'll tune in either via podcast or right here on the YouTube. If you aren't subscribed already, go ahead and do so. Hit the little bell button. You'll always know when we go live and all of our other great shows here at OnTap Sportsnet go live. Our boy, I am Skokes in the comments with the rock on. And Mr. Scott Crawford here, Justin to DJ equals 1,200 yards. I would argue Justin to DJ maybe equals 1,400 yards, truthfully. I mean, he's never had that kind of, you know, that first presence. And Q, I think that might be a good little segue here because we wanted to talk training camp thoughts because there's finally a couple of weeks now of reports and some film, albeit minor, because that's just the nature of the beast with the Bears when it comes to video at training camp. But two very notable things coming out of training camp are in that receiving room. A, it's the connection of Moore and Justin. 100%. People are calling it, Kyle Brandt called it lightning. We have an article over at OnTap Sportsnet in case you missed that, that they're lightning. You know, it's as if people are saying this, it looks like they've played together for years. That connection is there. It's established. That QB1 wide receiver one connection that everybody was hoping it would become with DJ Moore entering the picture, it appears to be the exact case. But there's also another receiver that's making some noise too here, Q, and I would love your thoughts on both of these talking points. Chase Claypool is reportedly having an incredible training camp. When you talk to anybody that has watched him, he looks poised. He looks like the freak physical talent that, you know, you and I have talked about right here on Bears on Tap. He looks like a player that knows it's a contract year and is going out there to prove people wrong that I'm not this lazy, underachieving ball player like you think I am. I'm going to go out there and show you that I deserve the bag, you know, walking into free agency next season. And you know what? I kind of hope he does, because if Claypool has a monster year, Mooney's got a monster year, and DJ Moore is a monster year, the Bears have a hard decision to make of who's wide receiver two next year and who they're going to pay. And I'm okay with that. Make Ryan Poles make hard decisions, because the harder the decision means the more talent that there is in the locker room, on the field, et cetera. So, I mean, Q, thoughts on Claypool lighting it up and thoughts on the 1 + 2 = 6 connection.
Yeah. I mean, so what I'm really interested to see is how, because we've heard so much about Justin Fields and Darnell Mooney over the last 2-3 years, right? Of like their connection and how much that they are just one in one. They're mentally, they're on the same page. So now that DJ Moore's here, does that magnify because of does that connection with Fields and Mooney magnify and get even better or more productive? Maybe not better. That is a better way to say it, is more productive because of DJ Moore's presence, or just more efficient even. Like maybe the yards aren't the same as they could be between Fields and Mooney, but the efficiency could skyrocket because it means that there's more openings for it. But with Claypool, I mean, anyone who's been listening to us has heard me just say over and over on our podcast, like, contract year, I don't know. This guy's got all the tools. If he wants that big bag of money, he's going to be showing out, like, coming into this year. And I think a big thing that I'm looking for going into the season, I don't think you're going to see it in preseason because he's probably not going to play enough snaps for it to matter, but will be the roles that he plays, right? Because he fits a profile to really play the Allen Lazard role in what Green Bay's offense was, right? Of being inside, outside, you're playing the slot, you're cracking down on outside runs, you are hitting those blocks every time. And like that's what the Bears really want to see from him, I think, is that ability to play the versatile role of being a game-changing blocker in their run game. Like, obviously, we all want to see the extreme success catching the football. But what's going to dictate his play time is how comfortable they are not having a guy like Mercedes Lewis on the field and still being able to effectively run the football to certain sides, and having that slot receiver become an impactful blocker. I think that's going to matter a lot for Claypool's ability to stay on the field this year, either that or him just flat out beating Mooney and everything and being wide receiver too, which I think Mooney's going to have a role in this offense as wide receiver too, which means Claypool's has to be a little different.
Yeah. And again, I think too, what that entails, right? Because he is such a monstrous physical freak. He's a guy that can make a big difference in the run game as a run blocking wide receiver. Absolutely. Without a single doubt, just like you said there, Q. So it is going to be really interesting, I think, to see what their kind of roles are. And to your point, I don't think we're going to learn what that is in preseason. I really don't. I think it really will be on September 10th at 3:25, well, 4:25 your time, you know, at Soldier Field. We're going to quickly find out what the roles of these receivers are after that game. It's going to be, I think it's going to be very apparent of who's
going to be doing what. An even better example than like I threw Allen Lazard out there, but think about the plays last year where you saw Equanimous St. Brown just wide open somewhere on the field. Like, that's the role that they're going to want Claypool to play, because it's one thing to do it with EQ. It's a whole nother thing to do it with a guy that's the physical specimen that Chase Claypool is, you know, and that stuff doesn't happen unless you're hitting some heavy blocks and they're setting it up for, like, okay, and he's just going to be open in space, and we're going to see what he can do with the football in his hands.
Yeah, and I think too, right, I think this will be the first year we also really see the tight end game really take its step forward and what that Getsy offense does. Because in years past, we've seen how tight ends can be productive in Green Bay. Even the second tight end can be productive in that system to a fault. It's going to be really interesting watching Cole Kmet, Robert Tonyan, and now Mercedes Lewis, who, again, we're going to get into the acquisitions here in a little bit. But having those three on the field on top of the three playmakers at wide receiver that you already have and what those roles are going to become. Because if you really think about it, if they run this offense the way they can and Fields is able to do what he needs to do from the quarterback position to be successful, there's opportunities for two dudes on almost every play to probably come wide open, especially if they establish the run game on top of it. Right. I mean, last year as a, subpar average offensive line at best, they were the best running team in the NFL. You develop that on top of an improved passing group, what happens now? You do get those, that Chase Claypool's wide open because people just forget about him because the bootleg is so convincing. And that outside zone to the near side of the field makes sense. And then all of a sudden, you're looking back door and Claypool's over there doing one of these. And he's like, give me the football. We want more of that, right? Because, everybody's like, well, we want to see Justin make the hard throws. Yeah, but if this offense could set him up to make the, the easy ones, that's what we want too.
Oh, man, that comment just triggered me. we've seen Justin make the hard throws. We need to see Justin make the easy throws. That's the stuff that he's struggled with. That's the stuff we need to see more of. Like, and I'm confident that he will, but like, that's the hard throws. We see those constantly for him.
Yeah, when he's threading the needle, I still think of that Darnell Mooney touchdown against the Miami Dolphins. I think that was like the perfect epitome of what that dude could do from the pocket with his arm. So,
or the two-drop touchdowns at the end of the Washington game.
Yep.
Or, well, one of them was dropped. The other was bobbled, so it didn't get in the end zone. But, like, still, it was – those were both incredible balls that just didn't end up being touchdowns.
Yeah, I feel like – so much of Fields doesn't do this well, you can go back, cut the tape on, and there are probably at minimum 10 instances last season in crucial moments of games where a wide receiver just failed Justin, plain and simple, right? I think the Nikhil, or the 92nd curl route against Green Bay where Alexander jumps the route. I could have jumped that route, unfortunately, if I've got a good enough head of steam behind me. I think back to the drop at the end of the Miami game, the no pass interference call on Chase Claypool at the end of that Miami game. Like, there were so many games they were in last year, and like, we would joke amongst my friends and I when we'd watch games together and giggle and just be like, that ref just wants the Bears to have number one overall pick. He's a Bears fan at heart. He knows what's best for this football club right now. It really did feel that way at a lot of times because they just, everything went against Justin Fields. Yeah, some of those are inevitable. Some of those are going to happen, but probably not at the same, nearly the same level as they did in 2022. And like you said, we just want to see him make the easy throws. The 5-yard drag across the middle of the field to Chase Claypool and let him be a yak receiver. That's what we want to see. We want to see nailing DJ Moore on the screen pass, perfect position for him to catch and just keep running upfield and get, 15, 20 yards. That's what we want to see from Justin. We know he can put it on a dime to Valus Jones, on the sideline with the blazing winds in December at Soldier Field against the Buffalo Bills. We've seen that. Now it's taking what the defense gives you in that piece of his evolution as quarterback. Yeah.
Like, I thoroughly believe that who was it to? I think it was to Mooney in the Washington game that, like, after it was almost like soul crushing the way that stuff was going in that game. And that then game, like, Fields stood in the pocket and hit like a 50-yard bomb down to Mooney and took the bit that I'm convinced that was one of the best throws of the NFL season last year. That we've seen it. We've seen him do it.
Yeah. Now it's just a matter of putting it all together. And if he does, woo, I can't wait. A couple of other, training camp talking points, I think, have really come to fruition now with the release of the unofficial first depth chart. And this is where I really want to kind of dive in a little bit, because there are some things that tie into training camp as a whole of why things have shaped out the way they have, and just what this team is starting to look like from a top of the depth chart to the bottom of the depth chart type perspective. The receivers, not a lot of surprise. Maybe the only big surprise, Equanimous St. Brown listed as the 4 over Tyler Scott. Again, unofficial. Might be just because he's a rookie trying to pick up on things, whatever. Roschon Johnson listed as the 5th running back behind Ebner and Homer and Foreman and Herbert. Again, I don't think they're cutting a 4th round pick. That might just be he's learning. He's still getting a hold for what the offense is. Give him some time. But there's a couple of other notable players here that aren't rookies that are catching my IQ. And I just wrote an article over at ontasportsnet.com not too long ago. There are some rookies on the defensive side of the ball that are catching my attention, but there are two veterans in particular that have fallen down the depth chart. And that's Travis Gibson and Kendall Vildor. Gibson, the last defensive end listed on the roster as of now at either side. He's the 7th guy on the depth chart. And Vildor is right now the 9th corner on the depth chart out of 10 currently in camp. Whereas on the flip side, your two rookie corners, Terrell Smith and Tyreek Stevenson, are your 3 and 4 corners behind Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson. To me, that's a very big storyline from camp, is just these veterans that I think Bears fans were hoping would take a step forward, especially Gibson. Maybe he's not so much Vildor, but definitely Gibson, are just falling out of the picture because of an influx of talent. We're on the flip side, all of a sudden we're sitting here going, son of a bitch, maybe Ryan Poles is onto something with these late round draft picks. Because if your fifth round corner is your fourth guy that's coming out on a dime package, that speaks volumes to what they did in the NFL draft this year, Q. So want your thoughts on all that, because to me, those couple of defensive storylines in terms of the depth chart are absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, so Gibson is surprising to me. And who, I mean, maybe this coaching staff saw enough of him last year. They know that he's not what they need. You know, maybe it's he doesn't have the length, the mass to do what they need him to do. I mean, I'm just spitballing here. But I was surprised to see that he was all the way down there, especially considering kind of how thin they are there. But you start to see it when you look at the guys that they brought in at defensive end and corner, but the guys that they attacked those positions with, you have DeMarcus Robinson, right? DeMarcus Walker. I knew something was off with what I was saying. DeMarcus Walker.
Now you're good.
Big, big defensive end who kicks inside sometimes. Rasheem Green, big defensive end who kicks inside sometimes. They know that this defense might have issues stopping the run if they don't have guys on the ends who can stop the run, because they might not have the interior to really do it effectively. Unless Dexter just is very good as a rookie, which as a more developmental pick, you don't really want to count on, right? Now, I'm not sure that Gibson fits that same profile of a guy who can really set a strong edge and win out there. And I'm wondering if that's why you see him so far down the depth chart. Now, at corner with Phil Dorr, I think there's a similar story. We saw what they want. They want long athletes at corner, which makes sense when you think about what they're running, right? It's going to be, if they're going to be running much more of the Tampa 2 style defense and a lot of cover 3 mixed in there, you want long cornerbacks who can play short areas aggressively because they have quick speed, quick explosiveness at plus length to be able to just make up enough ground to get in the short, to get back into the intermediate, whatever they might need to do there. Phil Dorr doesn't have that length. And I believe he's a plus athlete, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since he was drafted, but he doesn't have the length that they want out there. And Terrell Smith and Tyreek Stevenson do, and they have the athleticism. I mean, Terrell Smith was one of the sleepers of the draft, I think. And granted, I only watched, I think, 2 games of him going into the draft, but it was like, you could see it in flashes. And he was a guy who, you know, his freshman year at Minnesota, he started and actually he won one of the, I think he was first team all freshman that year and did really well for a freshman. But then Benjamin St. Juice transfers in and he's sitting behind him for the next 3 years, I believe. And just can't get back on the field until his senior year last year, when he finally got back on the field. So he got overlooked in a lot of ways, despite putting up some really good tape as a freshman and putting out some good tape last year at Minnesota too, while still, you know, you can sit on the bench and learn all you want without the game experience. There has to be a ceiling on what you can do. Right. So he was still learning stuff last year. And I didn't put out this article. Anyone who reads the ONTAP Sportsnet articles, we'll know this. I put out articles about setting expectations for every player up to the 4th round, I think, up to Roschon Johnson. I didn't do Tyler Scott. I didn't do Tyreek Stevens Terrell Smith. I didn't do Terrell Smith, excuse me. But I did do the numbers on those 2 guys because I was thinking about whether I should do the articles or not. And the article on Terrell Smith could have been really interesting because the physical athleticism comps that you get for him, they're pretty similar to what you get for Tyreek Stevenson. Like there is a lot to like in his game and his numbers that he put up, and a lot of reason to think he could do some good stuff if he gets on the field.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I mean, as things stand, obviously unofficial, I think there is a good chance that we do see a lot of Terrell Smith this year, kind of again as that dime corner when they do need to go four wide and you want, you know, four real coverage guys on the field in that instance versus, you know, your traditional three in your linebacking row.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting with him is that they've been playing him at safety some, and he's never really played much safety. And it's a tough transition. Corner and safety, the footwork's very different. So I've been told, at least. I couldn't tell you what the difference is, but I know that I've been told it's much harder than people think to make that transition. But the Bears have some serious depth questions at safety behind their starters. If one of those guys goes down, you got a seventh round pick in there real fast. And Elijah Hicks didn't show a lot to love last year or a lot of reason to believe that he's going to step in and just be just fine. And the was it Kendall Williamson? I think it was at Stanford. If that's not his name, then I'm really looking for Williamsons today. But another seventh round pick. I'm not sure if that's what you really want if Eddie Jackson or Jaquan Brisker goes down. Mm-hmm. And Terrell Smith might be a guy that you feel better about in there. And they've been practicing as if that's the reality of what they're planning on doing.
Yeah, 100%. And something actually really interesting here quickly. There was an updated unofficial version. So there was clearly an error in the first one. Roshan Johnson's listed as the third running back. So I think people can stop freaking out so much. That being
said, where's Travis Homer?
Travis Homer is fifth on the depth chart.
As he's paid running back on the roster.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? But, you know, and Tyler Scott is slotting in technically behind Claypool now as, like, the next guy up. So he's kind of a four. He's kind of a five. It's really weird how they have it structured. But, again, Travis Gibson still at the bottom. Kendall Villor still at the bottom. No defensive changes there. But, no, Kendall Williamson was the correct name that you were looking for there. Okay. Safety depth guy they just drafted this year. It's going to be really interesting. I think they've got a lot of, again, they've drafted to the Poles model, which is get freak athletes and then teach them the game if you need to at certain positions, right? Robinson was that way at defensive end last year. He's currently sitting as the second end behind Walker. You know, maybe that's what happens with a guy like Terrell Smith if he has to play a little bit of safety. Maybe, I could see a world where Terrell Smith is kind of this like almost hybrid, you know, safety corner kind of guy that like you like him in certain matchups. And maybe it's just, hey, he's a man on a Travis Kelce, perhaps, right? Like that kind of situation. Because I am Skokes is here in the comments. Terrell looks like a linebacker in person. He's super stout. So if he's that big and that physical, maybe that is kind of what the Bears envision for him is, hey, maybe you're not a true traditional corner, but like you're kind of the Swiss Army knife DB that we'll need that can kind of function between both positions and do them fairly well.
And that's where the NFL's been trending the last few years is into finding coverage guys who can play that more hybrid role. Like the Patriots are you want to see where the NFL is going, go look at Bill Belichick's defensive roster. Like I don't know who plays what position on that team because they don't really have positions. They're just everything all at once. It's very fluid where these guys line up, what they're asked to do. Everyone needs to be able to stuff the run. Everyone also needs to be able to play in coverage. If you're a pass rusher, you're a pass rusher still. But like you look at Kyle Duggar, he blitzes more than any DB, but he also plays deep coverage. He plays intermediate coverage. He plays the shallow area of the field. Like he plays a little bit of everything. And having guys who are capable of doing that has a lot of value in where the NFL is currently.
Yeah, absolutely. Just again, the NFL is more athletic than it's ever been before. You know, tight ends aren't guys that run 4.9 40s that can catch the ball well and block. I mean, Travis Kelce's a tight end, right? That's just the example. Cole Kmet, kind of the same way. Robert Tonyan, like the athletes at positions that historically weren't considered athletic positions are so different now that you do kind of need some of these hybrid-like players who can do a lot of things well defensively because otherwise you need to go 15, 16 personnel deep on your defensive side of the ball to account for those matchups, unless you find guys that can kind of check more than one box, which it kind of feels like Terrell Smith maybe is that kind of guy for the Bears.
Well, and also it's, you know, it's a Shanahan offense league, right? The Shanahan offense is so hellbent on getting you in heavy personnel and making you pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they do. They want to get you into more linebackers on the field so they can exploit mismatches in the pass game, because they're just going to beat you up if you don't do it. And how do you answer that? How do you counter that? Mm-hmm. It's by getting these guys who can do multiple things and who you're not worried about getting beat up by the 12 personnel that's out there, because they're strong enough, they're big enough to handle that, but they're also athletic enough to get back in coverage and hang with a Brandon Ayuk on the go route.
Yeah, exactly. One incredibly well said, Q. I can't add anything more. I think you nailed it on the head. Q, any other thoughts in terms of depth chart, in terms of training camp that you want to share with us before we kind of discuss some of the new faces in Bears camp over the last week or so?
Velus Jones. Velus Jones is in a weird spot because he dropped multiple punts last year, mm-hmm. but he mm-hmm. is their number one punt returner and number mm-hmm. one kick returner for that matter. And he was fine on kick returns. It was punt returns where the questions came in. But the Bears' only other punt returner on the roster is Dante Pettis, who he's battling with for a roster spot, right? Like, those two are they're battling for wide receiver six at this point. One was a fourth round or third round pick last year.
The third Velus third. Yeah.
And the other is a minimum contract vet guy. So that's an interesting camp battle to me to watch, because I mean, after you see a guy fumble multiple punts in 1 year, you have a real hard time not having a backup plan on your roster. And maybe you can find that guy somewhere, but like, you only got 53 spots. And right now the Bears are looking at that. They probably have 56 or so guys that you want to roster. So it's a tough situation for Velus, and he needs to really prove, like, in these preseason games. That's one thing I'm watching for. I bet you he is returning every punt unless he fumbles. And I want to see that ball stay secure in his hands. I don't want to see any questions about it, because the second there are some, you're just getting flashbacks of the Bears having to go search for guys mid-season who can just catch a punt, you know, and flashbacks to who was it? Was it Ted Ginn Jr. who they signed at one point, and all he did was fair catch every punt like mm-hmm. that. It's punts are hard. They're different than kicks, because your eyes are up, your eyes are down. Your eyes are up, your eyes are down. You're constantly worried about a guy just clobbering you the second you touch the ball. Like, it's a very different animal. Like, it's not as simple as just, oh, this guy returned kicks, so he can return punts too. It's a mm-hmm. different game.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's why, like, that's probably one of my favorite things I enjoy about listening to a guy like Pat McAfee, right? Obviously, the entertainment value is there. He's a great personality. That's all fine and dandy. But I do like when he starts to talk X's and O's, because he knows the punting game so well. And he talks about it. He's like, you know, he's like, why do you think Bill Belichick wants left-footed punters all the time? Because the ball comes off their foot differently than every other punter in the league. That messes with a punt returner. Like, that's just a small little advantage that a guy like Bill Belichick can come up with to get you and beat you as a team. It is such a different game in the punt return game, because – you know, like you said, you are watching for guys. You have to be able to make the decision of, do we fair catch this, or am I taking this? And, you know, do I have to make a first move on a guy immediately in order to avoid a potentially disastrous play? And then you're also worrying about how the ball's spinning, how the wind's carrying it, because the wind's going to carry a punt much more than it will a kick. That's just the nature of the beast.
You look down in Soldier Field to see where the guys are running at. You look back up, the ball might be way over here, you know? Right. It's different.
Another reason why Devin Hester just needs to be in the Hall of Fame, because the guy did both, and the guy was the best at both for, you know, a decade.
And every time he muffed it, he went to the house.
Literally, if he did muff it, he's like, I got it. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. I'm fine. Because then you see everybody like it was. I swear he almost did it on purpose sometimes where he could like because he would because the muffs never got away from him. He would muff it and then like control it. So I think he did it on purpose because he knew it.
He would, knew like, it.
Psychologically mess with the guys running down the field. It gets
guys out of their lanes because they're like, ball, and then Bingo. They just gun for the ball, and the lane opens wide.
And then all of a sudden, Mr. Shifty Hester is, you know, one cut, two cut, three cut, and he's got a caravan of guys going down the right sideline. Yeah, I would love to. That's a question I would love to ask Devin Hester. Like, did you muff punts on purpose just to fuck with guys? Because I know you would. Like, that's – but again, that's some Hall of Fame shit right there. If you're that good where you can control muff a punt knowing it's going to distract your opponent and take it to the house, that level of talent to me deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But I agree with you. I think
I'm calling my shot right here on Hester. Next year he's in. The first ballot class next year is a little weaker. There's going to be more room. I think next year he's in.
I certainly hope so. He's absolutely well-deserving. Q, let's talk a little bit about some of the new faces in Bears camp over the last, week or so now. We've seen two additions to the Bears locker room, both veterans, one being the guy's name that I have, as best I can phonetically spell it in my name tag here, but Yannick Ngakoue. Joined the Bears on a one-year, $10.5 million deal. $10 million of that $10.5 is guaranteed. So really nice contract for Yannick Ngakoue with the Bears. Finally adds an edge rusher. I wrote an article over at OnTap Sports that's saying don't stop now. I think they can try and add another one. Maybe a guy like Kyle Van Noy would look really nice on the other side, especially because you mentioned, right, with a guy like with Walker, who's going to kick inside a lot of times, especially on pass rush downs. You get another pass rushing veteran to come in on third downs and give you that little extra boost. I think it goes a long way. So they add Ngakoue, and then Mercedes Lewis on the offensive side of the ball comes in now to be the third tight end, be that blocking tight end, as you mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, Q. And another guy, too, that similar to Robert Tonyan, just very familiar with Luke Getsy's scheme and understands that offense and probably can bring a lot of veteran wisdom to some of the younger guys on the roster of just learning the system. So, Q, thoughts on the two additions here for the Bears, you know, as training camp is already well underway.
Yeah, Ngakoue seemed inevitable. You know, it seemed like they just Bears and him have been on a collision course for months now. And like, yeah, it was going to happen. It happened. He's an NFL caliber pass rusher, and the Bears needed that. I think it's as simple as that. Like, I don't think this is a guy that you're sitting here and saying, like, this guy is going to be our solution at the edge for years to come. No, I mean, he's a mercenary historically. If he really performs well, maybe the Bears give him another deal. I could see that happening, but he's also a guy who hasn't really been the dominant force on a defensive line anywhere he's been. Mm-hmm. Like last year, DeForest Buckner was on that D line. Year before, Max Crosby was on that D line. The year before, Calais Campbell, Pernell McPhee, Derek Wolfe, Tyus Bowser, Matt Judon, that Ravens line was stacked up with good players. And the year before that, he was in Minnesota, or actually the six games before Baltimore, he was in Minnesota, and he was the best player on that D-line. He was. He was playing with Ifedi Odenigbo, Shamar Stephen, Jaleel Johnson, DJ Wonnum, Armand Watts, former Bears great Armand Watts, I should say.
Bears legend.
But yeah, absolutely. But so that's really the one year, the one spot where he was kind of the marquee pass rusher. Because the 4 years before that, he was playing with Calais Campbell in Jacksonville. So he has typically been the secondary guy on most of these lines. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. When he was in Minnesota, he still put up 4 sacks in 6 games, still got a respectable pressure rate, but it wasn't as strong as what it's been in other places. So I'm tempering my expectations a little bit based on that, just based on the talent that the Bears have next to him on the defensive line. But I do think the Bears defensive line talent does beat Ifedi Odenigbo, Shamar Stephen, Jaleel Johnson, Jalen Holmes, DJ Wonnum, and Armand Watts. I do think they have more talent than that. So I do think it will be a little bit better than that. His stats are really interesting, though. Like, this guy has proven for long enough that he's going to get sacks that you just, no matter what numbers you throw out there, I could tell you pressure rate is more indicative of a player's future sacks than his sack rate.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter here because he's gotten 8+ sacks like every year in the NFL. And his pressure rate has never matched that except for one or two seasons. So I'm not exactly sure why that is. I do think a lot of it just comes – his sacks are very situational, right? He's not a guy who's getting you a ton of first and 10 sacks or anything like that. He's not on running downs where a team passes. That's not where he eats. Where he eats is in passing situations.
Third down and eight.
Yeah. True pass sets. Last year, 9 of his 12 sacks came in true pass sets. Year before, 9 of his 10 sacks. Year before, 6 of his 7 sacks. Year before, 5 of his 8. The large majority of this guy's career sacks have come in true pass sets, which is fine. You know, it's absolutely fine. But it also makes me question, he might not play as much on running downs as you know, some Bears fans might be thinking that this isn't Khalil Mack. He's not playing every down for you. He's coming in neutral to passing situations and going after the passer. There's going to be blown run lanes, most likely. I almost expect it because in those neutral situations, teams are probably going to attack him on the field with running the football. I mean, he's a guy who twice in his career, he's posted a sub 30 PFF run grade. You know, he's not a run stuffer. He's not out there to stop the run. And I mean, he might be interested in it as far as, you know, what the Bears are saying. It sounds like he is, probably because he wants a multi-year contract next year. So 100%. He's probably going to give some really good effort against the run this year, but I'm just not sure that he's built for it.
Yeah. He's built as that true, like, third down, pin your ears back, go get the quarterback kind of guy. And I think that's what everybody knew he was coming in. Quite frankly, I think that's what the Bears needed the most. They have the guys that I feel confident on, you know, like you said, those run in neutral situations to be able to get you a little bit of pressure now, but are responsible in the run. A DeMarcus Walker, right? A Rashawn Green, right? Like, those guys can hold the edge and be responsible in the run game defensively. And this cue is, I think, why I kind of wrote the article that I did of saying, don't stop now. Like, there's enough money left for the Bears. I think they can get another veteran edge rusher to come in on a one-year deal for not minimum, but lesser dollars, right? 10 and under, pretty much what Ngakoue got or less. I think that's very plausible on a one-year contract for a Bears team that, again, going into next season is going to have like the second most cap space in the NFL. They could easily go get a Justin Houston, a Kyle Van Noy, who is historically pretty good against the run.
Houston just signed, didn't he? I think Houston signed somewhere last night or this morning.
Let me do some Google machine.
So that one's off the board, but I agree with you, though.
Oh, yeah. Carolina Panthers are signing Justin Houston. So, but even then, a Kyle Van Noy, to me, is a very fascinating name because he's not a guy that traditionally has gotten you a ton of sacks, right? Like, he gets you 5, 6, 7 maybe per season, but he's a very responsible player in the run game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where your neutral to rundowns are a Van Noy and a Walker, but then on passing downs, Walker kicks into the three, in comes Ngakoue, pin your ears back, go get the quarterback, right? I think they have the ability to still add somebody that's going to be meaningful to where Ngakoue doesn't need to be a three down player. But I completely agree with you. You absolutely nailed that on the head, right? He is here to be the pin the ears back and go get the quarterback on third down kind of guy.
Well, and a thought that brings up is, like, what about the inside? What about a guy like a Matt Ioannidis or something like that? That could be an interesting free agent ad that they could still go after as well, to just to bolster that interior pass rush on passing downs. But, I mean, ultimately with Ngakoue, I mean, you're sitting here saying, you know, I feel like the Bears have a good enough base built, right? Like, on that D-line that you can say, you know, they're not going to excel at getting after the passer or stopping the run, but, like, I feel like they'll survive just fine. Mm-hmm. And they're stout enough there. and there's enough young guys that you feel a little hopeful about that maybe they could do better than just survive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're all sitting there saying, but on third down, who's going to make the quarterback nervous? Who's going to make him say, I got to get this ball out. I don't know where Eddie Jackson is, but I got to get this ball out.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have that. And now this talented secondary that you have, it feels more fruitful, right? It feels more purposeful because you have someone who can hopefully attack that passer and make them a little jittery back there. Make them, their clock runs a bit faster because Ngakoue, it's third and eight and Ngakoue is in a wide nine alignment and he's coming for you. And there's not a lot of answers for Ngakoue in third and eight from a wide nine. They're just, he's very specific, but he's very good in that specific situation.
Absolutely. And again, I think, like you said, I think kind of addressed that as a group throughout the summer, right? With our guest series was, yeah, the defensive line got better, but like they don't have that elite pass rusher in passing down situations that, like you said, right, is going. And I remember our episode with Robert was the exact same way. He said that's going to make an Eddie Jackson or a Jaquan Brisker all of a sudden become a little more feared being in that secondary, because if you do just hawk it up into the middle of the field as a prayer, chances are one of your two ball hawks is coming down with it in the middle of the field. So completely agree there. Any additional thoughts on Mercedes Lewis joining the group?
Oh, I'm Mercedes Lewis. I mean, one, it gives, like, it was kind of expected. Like, you're starting a rookie right tackle. You need a bit of a brick house who can sit, step in next to him and say, I got you, kid. We'll be just fine. But at the same time, it does make me a little bit nervous that they felt like they needed to add a really good blocking tight end to insert next to him or to either of the bookends, really. But like, I'm assuming it's more about Darnell, right? Mm-hmm. But generally, kind of expected that they went and added a blocking tight end like that. Cause I mean, Komet, he's big enough to block, but there's questions there about, you know, his really just getting the job done and getting it done correctly. Sometimes I feel like he's thinking out there when he's blocking and it's like, he's almost tentative at times, which is not really what you want when you're starting a rookie right tackle. And Tonyan, he's okay as a blocker, you know, but like he's a bit smaller, a bit slimmer, and not they needed a blocking tight end and they went and got one. Now, when you were saying that about Eddie Jackson, that just sparked something else in my head though, about like, when was the last time you can remember the offense getting chippy with the defense in camp? I remember plenty of times otherwise of like the defense being chippy with the offense, but the offense usually kind of takes it outside of the pits. The pits are a little different, I guess. Like, but like O-line, D-line, there's always going to be some emotions there that are spilling over. But like seeing Claypool and Jackson getting into it, I don't really remember ever seeing something like that. And I kind of like it because it tells me the offense has a little more fight than we're used to.
I think the last time I can honestly sit here and tell you I recall that is when Martellus Bennett had some words for Kyle Fuller as a rookie. But again, those are some really good Bears offenses because that was still the days of Alshon Jeffery and Brandon Marshall. So, yeah, maybe it is a little bit, like you said, it is refreshing that, you know, the defense, Chicago Bears defenses always have a chip, right? They always have that snippiness to them. They've had that aggression, you know, whether it was the Khalil Mack-led defense or, you know, the Danny Trevathan-led defense or obviously the Urlacher Briggs days. Like, that, those groups have always had that chip in terms of defensive play. And even now, I think this group has plenty of guys there, right? They got guys that'll get nasty. They got guys that'll get in your face. But I agree. It's refreshing seeing the offense have a little bit of fight to them because, to me, having that little bit of an extra aggression as an offensive unit means you're a very confident offensive unit and you are gelling well together, which to me, defenses need to gel, but defense is a lot of instinct. offense is really, hey, this is a well-oiled machine, and you are a piece in the engine that makes this thing go. When that unit is kind of clicking together, and you can feel that in whether it's them getting chippy with the defense, whether it's just how they operate on a day-to-day basis, that does give me a little bit of a smirk cue as like a,
yeah,
okay, this is nice. This is nice. I like this.
Yeah. It's got to be really easy for the culture of the Bears, just, I don't know, practice atmosphere to be very much like the defense kind of wins and we just put up with it, and they talk shit and we just put up with it because what are we going to do? Like, mm-hmm. And so it's kind of nice to see that they're not just putting up with it.
100%. I agree with you completely, Q. One last topic for us today, Q, before we go ahead and sign off is there's I can't believe I'm about to say it. There's a real football game on the horizon, albeit preseason, but it's still real football. The Bears will host the Tennessee Titans this coming Saturday, August 12th. It's a noon game at Soldier Field. A very interesting piece that came out of Titans camp is that defensive line coach Tyrell Williams will serve as the head coach for this game. Mike Vrabel giving him the opportunity to kind of get that taste of being a head coach, a guy that, from all reports, is a guy that could very well might be considered for a head coaching role in the not so distant future. So Vrabel giving him that ability and that opportunity to kind of run the show, albeit in preseason. I think it's very interesting for me. That's something that I found fascinating from the storylines leading to the week. But Q, it's our first chance to see what this 2023 roster can potentially look like. The starters probably only play a drive or two. Let's just call it what it is. But it's going to be, I think, a lot of fun to see. This is a year where the depth is actually exciting. I'm ready to see a guy like Tyler Scott get a lot of look. I'm ready for a guy like Roschon Johnson to get a ton of carries as that third running back on the depth chart. I'm ready to see what they have at depth on offensive line. Is Doug Kramer a dude? We really never got to see what he was because of the injury a year ago. Like, Hugh, what are the storylines, I guess? Because preseason, right, we're not really breaking down matchups and rosters aren't even set yet. But what are things that you are looking for on Saturday from this Bears team? And just what are those storylines that you're following entering the game that you're really saying, I'm going to keep a close eye on this guy or this guy or this situation?
Number one is easy. It's my dude, Jervin. Jervin Dexter, man. I want to see the get off. I want to see what's improving. I want to see if his pad level's getting better. And I'm curious to see how many snaps he plays, because if he doesn't play a lot, that tells me that the staff thinks that he is going to be in quite a bit this year. But if he plays a lot, that's telling me that, you know, they think he needs some development. Maybe mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean he won't play a lot this year, but they need to see more from him. And Zach Pickens, I expect to see Zach Pickens play a fair amount of snaps. And if there's one question that I really had with Zach Pickens in the draft process, it really had to do with, you know, how he handles power, how he handles physicality, and guys just, you know, getting into him and controlling him. And going up against the Titans, I mean, I think the Titans are world beaters, but I'm hard pressed every year to find a tougher, more physical team than the Tennessee Titans, which makes me think that has to reverberate down to the lower levels and to the roster, the practices, everything. So I'm interested to see how he plays against a physical front like the Tennessee Titans. That, and what's the purpose of the depth chart right now? It's to let teams know who's available. And to let teams know who's available, who you might be able to trade a seventh round pick for or something. And it's to let other teams know, hey, this guy's going to be playing a lot in these games. If you like him, make me an offer. So I want to see how Travis Gibson does. I want to see how these guys who are down the depth chart, kind of surprisingly, I'm interested to watch them. Did they put a chip on their shoulder? Are the Bears maybe going to be fielding offers for any of these guys? I don't expect that the Bears will really get much for a guy like Gibson if they decide, you know, he's not the right fit for our roster, just because he's, you know, I mean, you don't see players, these mid-level players, go for a lot often in the NFL as far as trades go, but yeah. It doesn't mean that you won't get something for a guy who might be further down the depth chart than you expected.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think the only things I'll echo or add, again, excited to see the rookies play. I think that is across the board. You mentioned two of them, right, with Dexter and Pickens. I think Stevenson and Smith getting look on the corners. Noah Sewell is currently the backup linebacker to Tremaine Edmonds. I think seeing him in that Mike role will be really interesting. Obviously, Darnell Wright, Tyler Scott, you know, Roschon Johnson are all obviously names that we're very excited about to see here. I just kind of am ready to see – I feel like, Q, and tell me if this makes sense. I'm ready to see this defense actually look like what this defense is supposed to look like. Because last year, it was the Tampa 2-like scheme with a lot of non-Tampa 2-like players. They went out and got a TJ Edwards, who looks really nice in that weak side linebacker role, that old Lance Briggs role. They got a guy like Tremaine Edmonds, who is just a pain in the ass in the middle of the field as that deep half, you know, coverage Mike linebacker in a Tampa 2. They went out and got some beef now at the D-tackle positions that they didn't have a year ago. And now you add further depth at the cornerback position in terms of length, like we touched on with Stevenson and Smith. I'm just ready to see that what the Tampa 2 looks like in with an actual like Tampa 2 personnel in place. And again, it's not perfect yet, and they're not going to run super complex coverages or anything like that. But it's just going to be really interesting to see how those players kind of gel and develop and who stands out, right? Because now they've added a lot of the depth via the draft or via free agency that are guys to fit the scheme. So how does that ultimately play out is, I think, something that I'm also looking at come this weekend.
Because you mentioned TJ Edwards in the weak side linebacker spot, I feel like I have to say this. So this past weekend, I was unpacking for moving. And, you know, of course, I was going to put something on the TV. So I put on the NFL Top 100 Players All Time, like playlist on YouTube, and just like was letting it run through. And as the Derrick Brooks episode is playing, it hits me after all this like talk about, well, who's going to play the weak side linebacker? Is it going to be Edmonds? Is it going to be Edwards? It's hitting me right in the face. Derrick Brooks, undersized, instinctual linebacker who excelled at the weak side. What was I thinking? Of course, TJ Edwards is going to be in the weak side more often. Like that's the description of what TJ Edwards is, undersized, instinctual linebacker.
Yeah, and just a tackling machine. I mean, you look at his numbers from the last 2 years with the Eagles, that guy's in on every play. And it really does kind of feel like, dare I say, Q, like this is probably the closest linebacking duo that we've seen with the Bears. Obviously, because of a lot of that being 3-4 for a number of years under Fangio and whatnot. But this is the closest we've really seen to like the Urlacher Briggs style. Right. Briggs was kind of an undersized linebacker who, you know, was instinctual and flew around and made tackles. And Urlacher was your hybrid safety effectively. I mean, he played safety in college for God's sake. Now you got that with a guy like Tremaine Edmonds who can cover that middle of the field. And you have a guy like TJ Edwards who can fly around instinctually on the weak side. So, and then I'm excited to see what Jack Sanborn does on the strong side when they are in three linebacker sets. I think seeing what his role in this defense is going to be fascinating too. Q, I think at the end of the day, I think what we're both trying to just say is we're ready for football. we're absolutely foaming at the mouth to watch some Bears football and have something to break down. And we will break that game down early next week, just like we are here. But Q, final thoughts for us before we get on out of here and look ahead to Saturday.
Mitchell Trubisky's first preseason game, he had what, one incompletion on 20 throws? Don't buy too much into preseason hype. And the Seattle Seahawks were slated to have the number one pick after the preseason last year because of how poorly they played.
Take it for what you will, folks. Well said indeed. Seahawks ended up being a playoff team for those that lived under a rock. And we obviously see how the Mitchell Trubisky situation has played out in hindsight. Q, my final thoughts, I'm just ready for Bears football. I'm ready to see the blue and orange back on the field at Soldier Field. It's going to be a beautiful thing. And like we said, we went through what we're looking ahead to watching on Saturday. I think having purpose in something in game action for especially a lot of these young guys. I think just seeing them on the field for the first time at the NFL level is something that's going to be really exciting, you know, for both of us to watch and for all the fans, just in general to watch as well. Q, before we shut this thing down, want to remind everybody Bears on Tap, one of two official podcasts here for the Chicago Bears coverage at On Tap Sportsnet. Check out our friends over at the Bears Nation pod. They're dropping a cool hype video tonight. Big shout out to them for that. I can't wait to watch that. I'm super excited to see what that ends up becoming. Be sure to follow them at Bears Nation pod over on the socials. Follow us at Bears on Tap on the socials as well. At Butka Stats, if you're not following Q, you're the biggest doofus on the face of the earth. I don't know what other way to put it. Incredible content always coming from Q's page. I'm at Loose on Tap. Follow other our other co-hosts as well at Juice on Tap. He'll be back with us here in the not-so-distant future. I got him working overtime right now with me over on the Cubs side of the house. And just with that note, we've got all of it covered. Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, you name it, we got it over at the On Tap Sports Network. So OnTapSportsNet.com and OnTapSportsNet on social media. Again, subscribe to the YouTube, hit the bell button. You always know when we go live with any of our shows. The OnTap Sports Network, go ahead and check out what's on tap in Chicago sports. Q, it's a pleasure to be back on a microphone with you, my friend. I'm glad your move went well. There was a void lost in my life not talking Bears football here with the Bears on Tap crew. I'm just excited for Saturday, man. And it was a blast. And what do you say? We get out of here the only way we know how, Bears on Tap with a good old Bear Down.
Bear Down.